This is 5 o'clock shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, originating at WBAI. And today we mark the beginning of the end, the second anniversary of the beginning of the Macondo well blowout, the BP disaster in the Gulf of Mexico, whose consequences continue to stun the ecology and ecosystem and fish and farmers of the region. In today's program, we will have a live interview with investigative reporter Greg Pallast, who, along with Echo Watch and Waterkeeper Alliance, today unveiled a new expose on the hidden history of BP's disasters, BP being the company formerly known as British Petroleum. This is 5 o'clock shadow, and I'm Robert Knight in New York. And in just a short time, we'll be speaking live with Greg Pallast about the new article that he has written called BP Covered Up the Blowout 2 years prior to the deadly Deepwater Horizon spill. His article, just released a couple of hours ago, says 2 years before the Deepwater Horizon blowout in the Gulf of Mexico, another BP offshore rig suffered a nearly identical blowout, but BP concealed the first one from the United States regulators and Congress. This week, EchoWatch.org located an eyewitness with devastating new information about the Caspian Sea oil rig blowout, which BP had concealed from government and the industry. The witness, whose story is backed up by rig workers who were evacuated from BP's Caspian platform, said that had BP revealed the full story as required by industry practice, the 11 Gulf of Mexico workers could have had a chance of survival. But BP's insistence on using methods proven faulty sealed their fate. So stay tuned for Greg Pallast and further and deeper details on that story. And on this anniversary of the BP blowout, we review some of the contemporaneous ways in which oil was being released, but information not quite as rapidly.
They were announcing the expansion of offshore oil and gas exploration, but in ways that balance the need to harness domestic energy resources and the need to protect America's natural resources. Under the leadership of Secretary Salazar, we'll employ new technologies that reduce the impact of oil exploration. We'll protect areas that are vital to tourism, the environment, and our national security. And we'll be guided not by political ideology, but by scientific evidence. That's why my administration will consider potential areas for development in the mid and South Atlantic and the Gulf of Mexico, while studying and protecting sensitive areas in the Arctic.
My name is Aaron Mehta. I'm a reporter with the Center for Public Integrity. We're a nonprofit newsroom that's based in D.C., although we have reporters throughout New York and a couple other places. And the stories that we're going to be talking about today are, assuming a series of stories that we've done, the main one is on these Coast Guard logs that came out that the center got a hold of that showed kind of the real timeline of what was happening once the rig in the Gulf, the Deepwater Horizon rig, caught on fire on April 20th. Previously, the real timeline that everyone had is kind of pieced together from news reports and from the official White House timeline, which they posted on their blog. The logs gave a significantly greater detail down, in some cases, to minute-to-minute actions about what the Coast Guard was doing, and in some cases, what the Coast Guard knew about this potential leak.
What were these documents, and how did you get them?
These documents were the Coast Guard's official emergency logs. They're essentially the internal documents from the Coast Guard kept, and they were the first government agency to be on the scene. They were there within minutes once the rig was actually on fire, responding in search and rescue fashion, and later on dealing with kind of the fallout of the rig catching fire, which we all know now is a significant amount of oil spilling out into the Gulf. We heard about these documents from a source that we had heard about a different story that we did that dealt with training exercises that were supposed to prepare the government for a situation like this. We did a story on that in early May. Heard about the fact that these logs existed, and with the help of Representative Issa, who's from California, California Republican on the House Oversight Committee, managed to get our hands on them and basically spent a couple of days just poring through them. And there's about 90 pages, and there's a lot of information there. You can actually check out the logs on our website, which is publicintegrity.org.
How do these records diverge from what we've been fed in public statements? It would seem to indicate that perhaps the Coast Guard was not as flat-footed or off base as the erroneous reports we've been given minimizing the extent of the leakage. What do these documents tell us?
Well, the thing that really caught our attention when we first started looking at these things is that within 24 hours, there's reports of an oil slick on the water. There's been at least two attempts by drone to shut down the well, knowing that the blow-up preventer, which is supposed to prevent a leak in case of in a situation like this, had failed. And again, within 24 hours, they were being warned that there was as much as 8,000 barrels a day of oil spilling into the Gulf. For a long time, it took a bunch of days before even the reports that there's 1,000 barrels coming out, and then that was raised about a week later to 5,000 barrels. This was really the first time that we found that anyone was saying 8,000 barrels within 24 hours, and that hadn't been reported before.
This is one of those what did the president know and when did he know it moments, isn't it?
Well, it's interesting. We talked to the White House, and one of the White House spokesmen said that the president was aware pretty quickly in the April 22nd meeting, which is about 2 days after the fire on the rig, that Ken Salazar told the president that this could become a major oil spill. What was interesting about that is we were only told that after we came to the White House with these logs. We hadn't actually seen that anywhere. And in fact, the White House official timeline didn't mention that. What we've been told by the White House, their spokesman, was that the timeline included a disclaimer at the bottom saying it's not meant to be comprehensive. But if the White House did know all this, then there's a question of why it wasn't on that timeline to begin with.
Let's just reiterate or perhaps even extend the details about the divergence between the minimizing statements that were given to the public from the two sources, or perhaps they are operating as one, that is to say, the White House and British Petroleum, and how the presumably knowledgeable Coast Guard got mutated into the minimizing of the leak. How did that happen, and what were the differences in the two accounts?
The differences are essentially a level of detail, which is that, if and we actually have a great graphic on our website, again, which is publicintegrity.org, which you can kind of track what the White House timeline said versus what the Coast Guard details were saying. But really, the White House log says that there's no apparent leak discovered, is the term they keep using, no apparent leak, until the 24th, at which point they say there's a leak. And then by the next day, there's 48-mile by 39-mile stain on the Gulf waters. There's reports in the Coast Guard already as of April 23rd, 3 in the morning. They're using disparants. They're saying that there's a 16-mile, square-mile sheen on the water. And in fact, at one point, the Coast Guard on the 23rd raised their estimate from 5,000 barrels to 64 to 110,000 barrels a day, which is greater even than a lot of the estimates that have come out and are considered the current estimates.
You mentioned the dispersants. Was there transparency on the use of them and the consequences that are perhaps not as favorable as British Petroleum claimed in insisting that was the best thing to do?
Well, the White House on the 22nd says that they the phrase they use is pre-positioned 100,000 gallons of dispersants and okayed with the EPA for their use. And the first disparant mention that we have is that they dropped 15,000 gallons on the 23rd, very quickly after that. There wasn't a lot of reporting done on this initially because there seemed to be a sense that there was a fire and for whatever reason it wasn't being covered up or covered by the media as a major leak yet. And the disparant use kind of seems to track with that. There's a little bit going on. Once there's a leak discovered, there is a significant jump in the use in disparants.
There are a great many consequences that can flow, pardon the expression, from this incident. And I'm wondering if the apparent public relations minimizing could conceivably be used in the future to reduce liability.
That's, again, not something that's really brought up in the Coast Guard logs. They're more concerned directly with handling the situation at the time. There is some talk in there about kind of the media attention that's being dealt with and trying to corral the media and how to, you know, deal with that, keep specifically false rumors that have come out, you know, if they rescued people, if they hadn't rescued people, trying to keep a lid on that. But there's not much talk about the liability inside these logs.
This is 5 o'clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, and that a representation of some of our live and contemporaneous coverage of the breaking events of the Macondo disaster in the Gulf of Mexico at the oil drilling platform that was operated by BP, the company formerly known as British Petroleum. And the irony is that the disaster happened less than a month after President Obama and Interior Secretary Salazar announced their bold plan to expand the offshore drilling regime, not only in the Gulf of Mexico, but off the Atlantic coast and off the shores of Alaska. We heard just before this Aaron Mehta of the Center for Public Integrity. We now take a moment to hear some of the hubris of the Obama administration in setting up the conditions that led to the BP disaster.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the Secretary of the Interior, Ken Salazar.
It is an honor to be here today with President Obama and other leaders who worked so hard to set America free from our dependence on foreign oil. We are here today because Americans have waited long enough for the energy security that they have been promised for decades. We are here to succeed where others have failed by finally cutting America's dependence on foreign oil, building a clean energy economy that is more secure and more prosperous, and protecting our children from the dangers of pollution. Oil, gas, coal, nuclear, sun, wind, geothermal, biofuels, hydropower, they all need to be on the table. So today, as part of our comprehensive energy plan for the country, we are announcing how we will responsibly expand oil and gas exploration and development on the outer continental shelf. Our strategy calls for expanded development and production in new areas such as the eastern Gulf of Mexico, where we can develop resources that are more than 125 miles off of the Florida coast. We're also moving forward with significant new oil and gas exploration in frontier areas, such as the Arctic Ocean and areas in the Atlantic, where we must first determine whether there exists oil and gas reserves, and then secondly, determine if we can develop them appropriately. And we are protecting areas off of our coast, like Alaska's Bristol Bay. Our efforts to explore, develop, and protect represent a new direction from the past, a change from the past on the outer continental shelf. After years of lawsuits and political battles, we are bringing much needed order and certainty to our nation's offshore leasing programs. This order and certainty will come from our commitment to ensuring that development occurs in the right places and in the right ways and in a manner that protects our precious environment. That we are making decisions based on sound information and sound science, much of it which still has to be developed. That we are listening to the communities that are most affected by development, and that we are following the law and have an orderly process for exploration and development. These are the principles that will guide our offshore energy future. As the Secretary of Interior, my responsibility is to balance the many values, needs, and uses on the outer continental shelf. I know full well that the decisions we make will affect our prosperity and the availability of affordable domestic energy supplies for years to come. But I also make these decisions knowing our responsibility as an American people to preserve the land, water, and wildlife that have allowed our country to flourish generation to generation. We are fortunate that in these times and this 21st century, as we face all the issues across the world and here domestically, that we have President Obama in place as our leader on all of these efforts. For President Obama understands that to do what is right for the country, we must rise above the political battles of the moment. Energy security is not a Democratic or a Republican issue. It is an American issue. It is an American issue whose time has come. Ladies and gentlemen, help me welcome the President of the United States of America, Barack Obama.
I think that by the end of his tenure, we're going to know that Ken Salazar is one of the finest Secretaries of Interior we've ever had. So please give him a big round of applause. Other members of what we call our green team are here. Stephen Chu, our Secretary of Energy. Martha Johnson, the Administrator of the GSA. Nancy Sutley, the CEQ Chair. We've got Carol Browner, who's the White House Energy and Climate Change Director. Please give them a big round of applause. They put in a lot of work. You know, Ken and I were colleagues in the Senate, and I appointed him because I knew that he would be a faithful and pragmatic steward of our natural resources. And as Secretary, he is changing the way that the Interior Department does business so that we're responsibly developing traditional sources of energy and renewable sources of energy, from the wind on the high plains to the suns in the desert to the waves off our coasts. And so I'm very grateful to the work that he's done, and it's culminating in one of the announcements that we're making today. A few weeks ago, I announced loan guarantees to break ground on America's first new nuclear facility in three decades, a project that will create thousands of jobs. And in the short term, as we transition to cleaner energy sources, we still got to make some tough decisions about opening new offshore areas for oil and gas development in ways that protect communities and protect coastlines. Now, this is not a decision that I've made lightly. It's one that Ken and I, as well as Carol Browner, my energy advisor, and others in my administration, looked at closely for more than a year. But the bottom line is this: given our energy needs, in order to sustain economic growth and produce jobs and keep our businesses competitive, we are going to need to harness traditional sources of fuel, even as we ramp up production of new sources of renewable homegrown energy. So today we're announcing the expansion of offshore oil and gas exploration, but in ways that balance the need to harness domestic energy resources and the need to protect America's natural resources. Under the leadership of Secretary Salazar, we'll employ new technologies that reduce the impact of oil exploration. We'll protect areas that are vital to tourism, the environment, and our national security. And we'll be guided not by political ideology, but by scientific evidence. That's why my administration will consider potential areas for development in the Mid and South Atlantic and the Gulf of Mexico, while studying and protecting sensitive areas in the Arctic. That's why we'll continue to support development of leased areas off the North Slope of Alaska while protecting Alaska's Bristol Bay. Some of the press may be wondering why we are announcing offshore drilling in a hangar at Andrews Air Force Base. Well, if there's any doubt about the leadership that our military is showing, you just need to look at this F-18 fighter and the light armored vehicle behind me. The Army and Marine Corps have been testing this vehicle on a mixture of biofuels, and this Navy fighter jet, appropriately called the Green Hornet, will be flown for the first time in just a few days on Earth Day. So moving towards clean energy is about our security. It's also about our economy, and it's about the future of our planet. And what I hope is the policies that we've laid out, from hybrid fleets to offshore drilling, from nuclear energy to wind energy, underscores the seriousness with which my administration takes this challenge.
President Barack Obama at a military base announcing the expansion of offshore drilling exactly 3 weeks before the worst oil disaster in the United States, the BP spill in the Gulf of Mexico, would occur as a result of that opening up of the offshore drilling policy by the Obama administration. This is 5 O'Clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network. I'm Robert Knight in New York, and we're honored now to be joined live by the investigative reporter Greg Pallast, who has been very busy on this very issue, along with his partners at Echo Watch and the Waterkeeper Alliance. And just a short time ago, a major expose titled BP Covered Up Blowout 2 years Prior to Deadly Deepwater Horizon Spill was released. And Greg is with us now. Welcome back to the shadow, Greg.
Glad to be with you, Robert.
Well, what have you dug up?
Oh, boy. And how it was not so easy. Just when the Deepwater Horizon exploded, that's 2 years tomorrow, right after that, I got into our office. Ms. Badpenny received a cable. She works for me. Received a cable from the Caspian Sea on the other side of the world that this was not the first BP offshore oil rig blowout. There had been another blowout in the Caspian Sea, massive, 2 years earlier, but it had been covered up by BP. BP, it's a police state. It's the nation of Azerbaijan through bribery, through the police state, crunching bones. And when I say BP's bribery and the help of the Bush administration, we know that through WikiLeaks. I flew to Azerbaijan, to Baku, the capital, looking for and finding two witnesses who said, yes, there had been a blowout. They were on the rig. They escaped. They gave us the details. Then I was arrested. They disappeared. A third witness, eyewitness, gave us all the details. He's still alive. In fact, I spoke to him yesterday. And his story, who this guy is, confirmed. Unfortunately, I can't use his name because it's so dangerous. But the Offshore Oil Workers Union and others have verified this information. There was another blowout, and BP covered it up. And it had the same cause. So, Robert, you have to understand, what we've found is that, and I did this originally for Channel 4 Television in Britain, and now with EcoWatch and Bobby Kennedy, what we have found is that the first rig blew out because they used cheap, money-saving nitrogen-laced cement, BP, in the Caspian Sea. It failed. And then they used it again in the Gulf, below the Deepwater Horizon, in the Macondo Well. The cheap nitrogen-laced cement failed again. It exploded. They had a blowout. Methane exploded. 11 died. Worst oil spill in America. BP never confessed to what happened before. In fact, they said, yes, it was the failed quick. Nitrogen does makes the cement dry fast. If the quick dry cement was what caused the deaths of those 11 men on the rig, and they blamed Halliburton, which sold them and poured in the cement, saying that Halliburton didn't tell them that it could fail. Well, Halliburton didn't have to tell them because they already knew it because it had failed before.
Our guest is Greg Palast, the author of the new expose in conjunction with EcoWatch and Waterkeeper Alliance about the prior accidents of BP, formerly British Petroleum, that may have some bearing on what happened in the Gulf of Mexico. And Greg, the etiology of the disaster in the Caspian involved what they call a gas release. Can you give us a bit of a technical picture as to how that downpressing of pressure is used to bring oil out of the undersea site and how that worked?
Well, etiology is a pretty big word, but they were lying. What happened, there was what BP did is they used the term gas release as a cover for a blowout. Let me tell you the difference between a blowout and a release. Mother Nature releases gas all the time. Pardon me, but so BP said that there was a natural gas leak, which could have been just natural from the seafloor, around the rig, near the rig, in the Caspian Sea, because they couldn't cover up the fact that they had evacuated 200 people in a panic. It was total mayhem. And so why did that happen? They said it was just precautionary. There was no blowout. A blowout is when the unbelievable pressure from these deep drill wells, like they have in the Deepwater Horizon or in the Caspian Sea, tremendous underground pressure is pushing up methane gas, and that's why they have to use cement to plug it. And the methane gas blew out the cement. So a blowout is when the cement goes out the stack, the top of the rig, just blows out, and you have cement or what they call mud all over the rig. And then methane gas, which is heavier than air, settles on the rig and, of course, can blow up with the least spark. the blowout one that actually comes through the well and through the rig. And that's what BP lied about. They said it was a... So they lied, by the way. The BP lied to the Securities Exchange Commission. So this gets to be serious stuff, because they told the Securities Exchange Commission it was, just a gas release around the rig, not a blowout. If they had told the truth, the experts we spoke to believe that there's a very good chance we would not have had the blowout in the Gulf 2 years later, because they would not have used that cement.
If I recall correctly, the way a drill works in an operation like this is sort of like a telescope with sections of diminishing radius the further down it goes. And at each section where there is such a junction of these parts of pipes of different radii, then it is necessary to seal so that the outer drilling ragged edge is structurally sound, or it's pressure contained. Is that correct?
Yeah, they have to encase every... the cement is used for two purposes. One, to create a kind of safety wrapping around that pipe,
yes,
especially as it changes its diameter, as you said. It's basically a way to wrap the pipe in case there is a leak at these joints where the pipes join. The second is to actually plug the well when they're done drilling it. See, they have a really expensive giant rig like the Deepwater Horizon drilling the well, and then they move that off and put on a cheap little platform rig, which takes the drills through that cement and pulls the oil and gas out of there. So they use the cement for two things. And you know the phrase, watching cement dry means it's really slow. And at $500,000 a day to rent a drilling rig like the Deepwater Horizon, you want that cement to set really quickly. So what Halliburton did is it came up with a way of mixing nitrogen into the cement, so it's like a milkshake, and they can just kind of pour it in, and it has very frothy, so the cement dries very quickly. The problem is, just like in any milkshake, you get bubbles. You can end up with channels, and that unbelievably high pressure gas from thousands of feet under the earth can go through those channels, pop out that cheap cement, and the methane goes right through the top of the rig and ends up on top of it and igniting. That's what happened in the Caspian Sea. Luckily, they didn't have an ignition because, unlike the Deepwater Horizon, no one was trying to bang the switches to cut off the blowout. But it was complete chaos in the Caspian, and BP covered up. So BP is blamed, by the way. So BP blames the Halliburton for not letting them know, by the way, this stuff can blow out. And Halliburton says, BP didn't know what they were doing. But both Halliburton and BP had separate knowledge of the failure of this cheapy method of drilling.
Greg, if there is a similar kind of accident that occurred in the Azerbaijan operation of BP, as did occur in the Gulf of Mexico, surely there must have been observers and regulators there who would bring this information forward to legislators here. Certainly this must have been known about by the Central Intelligence Agency or the State Department, or for that matter, the Azerbaijani Chamber of Commerce. Why was that information not brought to regulators' attention, to Congress, to the Obama administration, or was it?
Oh, it's a horrible story. We now know from WikiLeaks that the U.S. Embassy brought in the president of BP Azerbaijan, who said, yes, there was a blowout. It was the cement failed. That is, there was mud all over the place. That they were unbelievably lucky that it didn't blow sky high. So the U.S. State Department, our ambassador, knew all about the blowout, this terrible event. And the reason why our State Department knew about it is that Chevron and Exxon, BP's minor partners, were saying, where's our money? How come we're not making – they were losing like $100 million a day. It was one of the biggest rigs in the world. And where's our money? And then they were told, well, it was this terrible blowout. But they all agreed to keep it quiet so that they wouldn't have to change their methods or they wouldn't lose the right to drill in the Gulf of Mexico. BP, Chevron, and Exxon all testified to the U.S. Congress 6 months before the Deepwater Horizon blowout that they've drilled safely for half a century offshore without a problem. They never mentioned, even though all three companies knew, they never mentioned the blowout in Azerbaijan. The Bush State Department never mentioned the blowout in Azerbaijan. It was September 2008, at the end of Bush's term. Condoleezza Rice and her gang kept it all silent, and the Azerbaijan government kept it silent because they were paid millions. They, in fact, I have a BP executive who said he personally brought the cash to the government officials. I have him on camera. And he was also, by the way, an MI6 agent, so we got this verified. BP, by the way, has responded to my charges in Britain by refusing to say they have not denied that there was a blowout. They did not deny that they paid the bribes. They simply said, we followed the law. That is, and at the time, it was not against the law to pay bribes in Britain. And they've never denied the blowout, but they won't admit to it either. So you have to understand, BP has not said, oh, this is a bunch of baloney from the Greg Palast report. That's what's really creepy, and that our own State Department knew about this and kept it silent is very sad.
Well, there is a multi-party recklessness, it appears, Greg Palast, in the Bush administration covering up the evidence of the BP malfunction in Azerbaijan. But then again, also the Obama administration, which was no spring chicken, as the old expression goes, by the time of the 31st of March 2010, when, as we heard earlier, President Obama, Secretary Salazar, and others went gung-ho on offshore drilling. And I don't find it plausible, and you can tell me whether that's a reasonable assumption, that 2 years, or a year and a half, two into the Obama administration, that they did not have access to this information and yet went so boldly as a promoter of offshore drilling. How do you assess the position that Obama took on this?
Well, I'm very interested because Bobby Kennedy and I and EcoWatch have called, are going to be putting together a petition. If you want everyone to sign, go to gregpalast.com. We'll be putting this together to demand that Eric Holder open an investigation of what BP knew and when they knew it, what Chevron and Exxon knew and when they knew it, and the U.S. government. Now, we know that the Bush administration knew, but I think Holder, if we're going to open this thing up, was this information passed to the Obama administration? We don't have any record that the Obama administration was told, so I don't want to make the accusation. We know the Bush administration had the information, and Chevron, Exxon, and BP. I want to open this record and find out whether, in fact, the Obama team knew about it as well. We don't know that. I think you got a great question there. I think that the Justice Department owes us an answer.
Well, it's a question with two eyes, ignorant or incompetent.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other question. I mean, it's not like there weren't questions about this process to begin with. Brazil doesn't use it, you know, but I know we're a third world nation, not like Brazil. You know, they're rich. But, you know, Brazil has big deep water offshore platforms. They, by the way, they had a leak, very, very, very minor compared to what's happened in the Caspian or the Gulf. And they arrested Chevron officials, including an American executive of Chevron. They don't put up with this stuff in other places. Well, they do in Azerbaijan because the government gets bribed. But in a place like Brazil, you play fast and loose with the procedure for deep water drilling, you go to prison. In the United States, you get a bonus. It's quite stunning. There is no attempt to bring criminal charges against these guys. And now we know what happened. That this story is out here, it would be very difficult for them to say that there is not a criminal cover-up which led to these, to what is negligent homicide. And, you know, that's a legal conclusion. I leave that to, you know, law professor Kennedy. But we certainly need to find out if what the Obama administration knows. And I would really We need to bring in those Bush administration officials who knew all about this and didn't even tell our own safety regulators.
This is 5 O'Clock Shadow. I'm Robert Knight. That is Greg Pallast, the author of a wide-ranging new expose on the history of BP's disasters with offshore drilling, titled BP Covered Up Blowout 2 years Prior to Deadly Deepwater Horizon Spill. And Greg has worked on this in conjunction with Echo Watch, echowatch.org. And the full Monty is available at Greg's website, gregpallast.com. And Greg, I was taken by a nonchalance you uttered earlier about having been arrested during your investigation in Azerbaijan. What happened there?
Well, I'm only nonchalant in retrospect. I can laugh about it now. It's in a police state to be arrested is no fun. Apparently, BP was tipped off, and then after BP was tipped off, the Azeri government was tipped off that we were on the case of what happened to the blowout. So on our way to look for witnesses at the BP terminal, I'd gone off-road, and because we were ratted out, we got stopped by the military police and then the secret, the security ministry, scary characters. Like I say, two of our witnesses just vanished on the way to meeting us. And a third, I'm happy to report, is out of the country. Thank God. But I got out because working for British television, BP, British Petroleum, cannot have a diplomatic and PR disaster. So they let us go pretty quickly. But on the other hand, they grabbed our passports, and then we basically had to sneak our way out of the country. They're going to either throw us out. Of course, they wanted our film, but and we have to get, they have guns, and we have kind of fake press passes. And so we gave them film, but on the other hand, I also had a little camera hidden inside a pen, those little Austin Power jobs, and that was, so I still got my film and my evidence.
Greg Pallast, you today released part one of two of this expose. Can you give us the full dimensions of today and what to expect tomorrow?
Well, today you're going to read about the prior blowout in Azerbaijan, that they covered it up, that they covered up the fact that it was nitrogen, that they used this cheap crap cement process to save money, and that led to these deaths. Even BP says that. They just don't admit that they should have known that they knew it already. You'll also find out other things that happened. One of the reasons people died in the Deepwater Horizon is chaos in the evacuation and emergency planning when things went wrong. They had that same thing in the Caspian Sea, so this was not news to them. They had, as one worker described it, utter mayhem. There was even a mutinies on the lifeboats as there were fights between the Azeris and the British workers. So they went through that, the same thing, plus the blowout preventers, which also were a problem in the Gulf of Mexico, which should have obviously a blowout preventer should prevent a blowout. They don't, and they didn't in the Caspian. And there, because sometimes they disable them or they don't use them, no one knows if the blowout preventers failed in the Caspian or they weren't activated for some reason. We don't know what happened, and we should have. There should have been a full investigation to find out what. Did those blowout preventers fail then? If so, then we should have known they would fail in the Gulf. Now, tomorrow, we're going to have more. Go to gregpallast.com or ecowatch.org. You're going to have more. And there's, by the way, some film there, too, from Azerbaijan, from my little pen camera. And we will have the story of the bribery by British Petroleum executives of the Azerbaijan officials, and more from the WikiLeaks and the BP cover-up machine. And, of course, Exxon and Chevron are in part two. We have to remember these oil companies work as happy little families, and they cover each other's misdeed. Because none of them want to be responsible. None of them want to have to change their processes to something more expensive.
Greg, in order to put this all in perspective, I'd like to ask you about the cosmetic moratorium on offshore drilling after the Macondo disaster and what appears now to be a resumption of that agenda. My question for you, Greg, is the American citizen, environment, ecology, wildlife, sea life, are they any safer today than they were 2 years ago?
In some ways, less safe, and I'll tell you why. We had an official presidential panel on the blowout, which made a series of recommendations. There were 150 pieces of legislation to improve safety in oil drilling offshore. Not one has passed into law, not one out of 150. The recommendations pretty much completely ignored. BP has five rigs like it did before the blowout. And the problem is that they did not have a strong oil spill response system in place. There was no reason, even with the blowout, for the nearly 1,000 miles of shoreline of the Gulf to be poisoned. A lot of that crap's still out there. The problem is we actually now used up all the safety equipment, the boom, the oil boom, et cetera. We don't have that. If there is a disaster right now, there's less safety equipment, less oil spill response equipment ready to roll. Now, they are beginning to spend some money finally to correct that. And when I say correct it, they were supposed to have that stuff in place before the Macondo well blew out. But at the moment, they're not ready for another blowout. The moratorium was an obvious thing that had to be done because there was no safety equipment left. And there was an attempt to find out what happened before we start drilling again. Well, we found out what happened, but then nothing was done about it. So the idea was, well, we won't drill until we know what happened. Now we know what happened, and they're still drilling. And for example, why are we still, if BP has said Halliburton lied about using this type of cement, it's unsafe, and I know that BP knew it was unsafe already from the prior blowout, why are we still using it anywhere? Some of the companies are, some of the companies aren't. Why don't we have a rule that says you can't use this stuff? It's dangerous. People die. Why? We are not. After the moratorium, it's like it literally went back to business as usual.
So the Obama administration, does it remain committed to increased offshore drilling?
Obama administration, and by the way, I don't find this as an excuse. I'm just telling you where it's at. They're panicked by the chant of drill, baby, drill, that somehow Americans have been sold the idea that if we drill more in the Gulf, if we open up drilling in the Arctic Sea, which Obama just approved. Bush, by the way, would have never done that. I hate to say it. Obama's approved drilling in the Arctic Sea. The idea that if we could drill up there, have an XL pipeline, and drill in the Gulf will somehow bring down the price of gasoline at the pump is nuts. The U.S. ability to change the world supply and world price of oil is pretty close to nil in terms of, we could pump all the oil out of the Arctic, including out of all the whales we're going to chase away. We could punch endless holes into the Gulf and turn it into an oily, totally oily swamp. It's kind of getting that way anyway. And it would have, the international price of oil and the price of oil of gas at the pump would barely move.
Well, Greg Palast, I'd like to congratulate you once again on a great piece of work. BP covered up blowout 2 years prior to deadly Deepwater Horizon spill that you are publishing with EchoWatch and the Waterkeeper Alliance, EchoWatch.org. And, of course, you're on the website, GregPalast.com. And we shall stay with you and follow this, and hope you remain well in the course of such good work.
And I hope my sources remain well. That's the main thing. And thank you so much for revealing the shadow side of this business.
We live in the dark sometimes. And then again, that is why this program has that name. The 5 o'clock shadow is the darkness that surrounds us all at this time of day.
Okay. Catch you later.
Thanks for bringing some light. This is 5 O'Clock Shadow. And here now is how the United States government on the 17th of September 2008 indicated through a State Department cable from Baku, Azerbaijan, its knowledge of the BP disaster on the oil rig in that part of the world.
Confidential. Embassy Baku. September 17, 2008. Subject, Azerbaijan, gas leak slashes oil production in offshore ACG field. According to BP, British Petroleum, Azerbaijan Vice President for Communications and External Affairs Seymour Khalilov, at 0820 hours Baku local time Central Azeri offshore oil platform workers noticed gas bubbles about one-third the size of soccer balls coming to the water surface around the platform. Subsequently, the platform's gas detection system signal went off, signaling abnormal levels of underwater gas. At 0900 hours, the offshore installation manager decided to evacuate the platform, sounding the muster alarm at 0900 hours. The 211 workers aboard the platform immediately deployed to lifeboats, subsequently moving to an offshore vessel to be transported to shore. BP Azerbaijan then shut in production at the Central Azeri field and also shut down all pipes coming into and out of Central Azeri, forcing a shutdown of production for the Western Azeri platform. To note, these two platforms are the two major ones in the ACG field, designed for a combined total of approximately 600,000 barrels per day. Khalilov told Ekhanov that with Central Azeri and Western Azeri platforms shut down, there would be a production decrease of approximately 540,000 barrels per day. He said the Eastern Azeri platform was still producing, albeit at reduced rates. The deepwater Gunashli platform was also continuing production at approximately 90,000 BPD, and the Kyrak platform was still flowing at approximately 120,000 BPD. Operations at the offshore Shahdani's gas field were not affected. Khalilov said it was too early for BP to have an idea of the cause of the underwater gas leak. BP was dispatching a remotely operated vehicle Rove to Central Azeri to conduct an underwater survey of the subsea structure. BP was also reviewing the results of last year's Rove underwater inspection of Central Azeri, conducted approximately September 2007, to see if there were any clues as to what might have happened. Khalilov said that BP Azerbaijan would not restart production at these two wells until and unless it understood the cause of the leak. BP Azerbaijan has set up a BP business support team, meeting every few hours.
Along the shores of the Caspian Sea, I worked a job for the oil industry. A Texas boy, so far away from home, Azerbaijan can really make you feel alone. Along the shores of the Caspian Sea, I met a girl, her name was Ecstasy. Her eyes were dark, but they shone so bright. We took a walk along the strand.
The sounds of Brazzaville, and that concludes today's anniversary edition, the second anniversary of the Macondo BP Deepwater Disaster in the Gulf of Mexico edition of the program, with engineering by Michael G. Haskins and production by Thiago Barroso. If you have comments, leaks, tips, or suggestions, please email us at theshadow@wbai.org. And for 5 O'Clock Shadow, I'm Robert Knight in New York.